coming up on Path to Zero.
There will be that last mile that will not be able to decarbonize through electricity, through green electrons. And that's for that last mile that we should use renewable hydrogen and its derivatives.
Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, recorded from the Reuters Global Energy Transition Summit in New York City. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
In this episode, we'll discuss the current state and future prospects of renewable hydrogen. Our guest is Anna Kayish, the Managing Director for Hydrogen at EDP Renewables, one of the leading renewable energy companies in the world. Anna, it's so nice to have you with us here in New York and Reuters. Looking forward to your talk later, but welcome to Path to Zero.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
You know, we've had the privilege of having a lot of guests that are experts in their field, but maybe sometimes we haven't talked about hydrogen enough. I'm looking forward to talking with you about that. But let's start by talking about kind of who you are and what your company does.
Sure. So my name is Anna Kayish, as you mentioned, and I'm in charge of the hydrogen business unit at EDP. EDP, for those of you that are not so familiar with the company, it was born as a utility company, incumbent utility company in Portugal back in the 50s. And since then, we've grown the company and through internalization as well. And we're present today in more than 30 markets around the world. And we're a global leader in renewable developers.
And still the utility company for a large swath of Portugal, right?
Exactly. So in Portugal, in Spain, in Brazil, in different parts of the country, we work as a vertically integrated utility present along the entire value chain from conventional generation, renewables, transmission and distribution, transmission in Brazil, distribution in Portugal, in Spain, in Brazil as well, and the retail side of the business.
And you talk often about hydrogen, but when you do, you talk about renewable hydrogen. Is renewable hydrogen and green hydrogen, are they similar?
Yes, I guess there's no defined concept for green hydrogen, and renewable hydrogen is a concept that we're really trying to define in a legislative form, so we all understand exactly what we're talking about in different parts of the world, and also to really characterize the technology in itself and the way we design projects so we can capture different support mechanisms. And so the definition of renewable hydrogen is something very concrete. For example, in Europe, we already have that definition very clearly in place, and it's something that we're working on here in the U.S. to clarify.
Yeah, I was trying to bait you a little bit. Most people that work in hydrogen really despise the color wheel. They find it to be very misleading, as you say. So renewable hydrogen probably is a much better word, particularly if you can define it.
Yeah, what's really at stake, it's the production mechanisms in place for the hydrogen. And if you utilize renewable power to produce hydrogen, which is what we're doing in our projects, ultimately you'll be able to call it renewable hydrogen if it complies with certain legislation and certain characteristics. For us, what we really know how to do is the renewables. Hydrogen is something new for us. The renewables is our strength, the energy management, the upstream part of it. And we will only be developing renewable hydrogen projects, so that's why I'm solely focused on renewable hydrogen projects, whereas others are probably focused on, for example, what's called the blue hydrogen, which is utilizing natural gas and capturing and storing the CO2 that derives from it. And the traditional form of producing hydrogen is typically called as a gray hydrogen, because it just uses fossil fuel-based natural gas or coal, but mainly natural gas to produce the hydrogen.
Great. You're here to talk on a really nice panel, looking forward to it later today, hydrogen and carbon capture and storage, a viable path to decarbonizing hard-to-abate business. So give us a teaser. Is it a viable path? And maybe where are the hard-to-abate businesses that you'll most help?
Well, I think we have to maybe just do a step back and understand the reason, the motivation for us to be talking about hydrogen and CCUS later in the panel. So really focus on a profound belief that we need to fully decarbonize our economies. And so to do that, to really go towards the net zero and follow this path to zero, then, of course, energy efficiency and the right electrification of our economies will be the main focus and the main strategies to achieve that decarbonization. But there will be that last mile that will not be able to decarbonize through electricity, through green electrons. And that's for that last mile that we should use renewable hydrogen and its derivatives. So there will always be the need to burn something, to burn a molecule to generate energy, and also as a feedstock. And that molecule, to be green or to be renewable or low carbon, we need to really change the way we produce it, and we need to replace some fossil fuels by these green molecules. So that's really for those last miles. And the last mile, I mean, the applications that we don't see a feasible, technically or economically feasible path to decarbonize through direct electrification. So very high temperature heating, mobility, or the transportation sector, in particular aviation and maritime sectors. Those sectors, I mean, it's very hard to understand today a viable path through, just batteries and electric solutions. Also within the industrial applications, those that require very high temperature heating, that we cannot supply with electricity, those should be the focus.
And steel, cement would be two easy ones. Glass making, could that be a third one?
Yes, steel, cement, the petrochemicals, so the refineries, the ammonia production, those that use actually hydrogen as a feedstock, those would be the primary focus.
Do you see that you're having a different conversation in, I'll just say, Europe? We can actually let you be more specific to Portugal. Do you view hydrogen differently, you think, in Europe than we do in the U.S., or is it fairly well viewed as the same?
Well, I think there's a fundamental difference, which is the fact that in Europe, of course, we are fully concerned with the decarbonization, but we're also very concerned with our energy independency. And so renewable hydrogen has the potential actually to provide and contribute to both, to the decarbonization and to increase our independence from imports. In Europe, in contrast with the US, we don't have enough fossil fuel supply to be targeting the blue track of hydrogen. So there, I think the primary focus is on developing technology and developing projects, taking advantage of renewables in the power sector, and follow the green path, the renewable hydrogen path.
Yeah, that's interesting. How do you think this, I read where you were in Houston just a while back and kind of saw that debate unfolding, maybe about how the hydrogen market evolves. How does the hydrogen market evolve?
So today there's no hydrogen market, just to be clear. So today,
there's no renewable hydrogen market. There's a huge hydrogen market. And I think that's something that people who don't really listen, they lose track of. There's a lot of hydrogen, but to your point earlier, it's almost all gray, some of it even black, coming from coal.
It's all gray or black. It's all gray and it's all captive. Mm-hmm. So there's no really price discovery of the commodity. It's not a commodity.
It's not particularly good for the environment. It's not particularly friendly.
And it's not used as an energy vector.
Right. Renewable hydrogen is going to be different.
Completely different.
Yes.
The hydrogen that we use today, it's a feedstock. It's produced and consumed locally. It's not traded. In general terms. And the majority is produced and consumed locally in refineries and for ammonia production, almost half-half. As an energy vector, hydrogen does not play a role whatsoever in the energy mix. But going forward, our energy mix will have to be completely transformed. The amount of energy that we will consume will be much lower because of energy efficiency gains. The amount of electricity that we consume will be much higher, both in absolute and in relative terms, because the majority of the fossil fuel consumption should be replaced by direct electrification. And there will be this new kid on the block on the energy mix, which is the renewable hydrogen and its derivatives that, as I mentioned, today have no expression whatsoever in the energy mix. And the renewable hydrogen and its derivatives will replace part of the fossil fuel consumption that we have today for energy purpose for the last mile, for the high temperature heating and for the transportation that I described before.
You stayed away, so I want to emphasize what you said because it's really important. You clearly see renewable hydrogen used in hard to abate industries and completely agree, steel, cement, jump to the mind, but petrochemical, there's a lot. So for sure agree. You also say that you think in transportation for last mile, and I take it that's probably in used directly in an internal combustion engine, right? That's probably where you see it for the last mile?
Well, I'm talking more for the aviation and the maritime.
Ah, okay. Oh, not so much in on-road transportation.
For road transportation, it's still unclear to me if there will be a winning technology. Mm-hmm. Within the city and for light-duty vehicles, battery electric vehicles are much more efficient, and that should be the path.
Okay.
For heavy-duty, long-distance transportation, maybe fuel cell vehicles will have a role to play.
Okay, yeah, I agree. So then the last conversation we tend to have in the U.S., and I see it more from either policy hopeful or sometimes natural gas industries, is the natural gas industry will evolve to this mix perhaps of natural gas and hydrogen in the natural gas mains. You feel it?
The problem with that is that the majority of the natural gas that we consume today is for low temperature heating or for other purpose that would be better, it would be better if you replaced by electricity directly. So actually, renewable hydrogen or decarbonized hydrogen, it's a very noble molecule. And although in principle, it can replace pretty much all the fossil fuel consumption that we have today, it shouldn't because it's not the most cost-effective path. And once you mix that noble molecule, the renewable hydrogen, into the natural gas grid, and you blend it, you're actually, of course, contribute to the decarbonization, but you will contribute to the decarbonization of sectors that should be following a different path. And so in the beginning, I fully believe that we should focus on the applications that for sure we understand that have no alternative. And also producing locally, producing the renewable hydrogen close to the consumption of the renewable hydrogen, and by then means avoiding complex logistics of transporting and distributing hydrogen that is not in place today.
A lot of talk recently about geologic hydrogen, naturally occurring hydrogen that we can find and use, so no concerns about converting it. You got an opinion on geologic hydrogen?
I don't have a solid opinion because I guess it's still very unknown. So I think it's something that we should look, we should carefully understand and try to really quantify if this is a real opportunity to decarbonize with the volumes that are required and sustainable in the long term. So it's a question, I think, still for innovation and research.
And so in your business model, you would identify a customer, could be a utility, an industry, or whatever, that is the right user of renewable hydrogen. Then will you come in and provide all of the capital, all of the equipment, and then sell them hydrogen out the front door? Is that your business model?
That's the business model. So like I mentioned in the beginning, hydrogen is new for us. Mm-hmm. What we really know how to do is the renewables. We will not consume hydrogen, so we have no pretension to consume hydrogen. We will also not participate in the transport and distribution, the logistics of the mm-hmm. hydrogen. We don't develop the technology. So what we do is we invest and we develop the project. So we are developers, like we develop the renewables, we are developing hydrogen projects as a means to increase value for our renewables. So when you have a renewable hydrogen project, the production costs of it, the majority of it, in some cases, two-thirds or even more, is related with electricity sourcing. So really mastering that part of the value chain and having a portfolio of renewables to play with. Today we have more than 20 gigawatts, 24 gigawatts of renewables in our portfolio, and a combination of wind and solar, and in some markets also hydro. And a tremendous large portfolio of renewables still to develop, and we're growing on renewables 3 gigawatts a year. So having a portfolio of renewables to play with and really managing the energy is key for the success and of the competitiveness of renewable hydrogen projects. So we're adding the renewable hydrogen production as a means to increase the value for our renewables. We're also taking advantage of some of the existing assets that we have. For example, in Spain and in Portugal, we have coal power plants, sites of coal power plants that have already been closed or are in the process of being closed and decommissioned. And we're taking advantage of those existing assets and also human resources to transition into the renewable hydrogen economy. So we're starting from existing sites, so existing land, existing grid connection, access to water, in some cases desalinated water. And all of these sites are on port areas because the coal power plants used to work with imported coal. And the neighbors are all the good candidates that you have on ports, like large refineries, petrochemicals, the steel makers, the good candidates to really value the renewable hydrogen production. So our most advanced projects when it comes to renewable hydrogen projects are of that typology that we are developing in Spain and in Portugal and also in Brazil, taking advantage of those assets, that infrastructure. And we're also, I think this is a very good also add-on to these elements to add on these on these projects, is that we have, of course, hundreds of technicians and engineers at EDP that they know for sure they will never again build a thermal power plant for EDP. And they will soon also no longer operate thermal power plants for EDP. So we are going through a reskilling and retraining program internally to focus also those assets, those human resources, into the renewable hydrogen world.
Fascinating. Talk to us about one thing. We rarely talk about it, but you mentioned it twice just then. In the making of hydrogen, quite a bit of water is necessary. And so first off, where you go, I mean, is water is a precious resource as well. Are you doing anything that begins to think about using less and less water in the making of hydrogen, or is that just a necessary component?
It's for sure a necessary component. We need the water because we need the molecules. And it's also good to understand that in global terms and in general overall terms, the water that is required to produce hydrogen, to produce renewable hydrogen, longer term, in a steady state, will be just a fraction of the water that we consume today for the production, the extraction, the transportation of the fossil fuels. So it's a net gain at the end. It's a net gain. But that doesn't mean, of course, that in certain locations, water is not a concern because it's a stressful region. So what we're doing actually in some of our projects, we are taking advantage of the fact that we are on coastal areas and using potentially desalinated water. And actually we have already desalination in some of those sites. So desalinated water could be a solution. Also, we're in one of our projects, we're using recycling water. So we're working with the local utility and using recycled water for the project. So that's also another route. And water, at the end of the day, in economic terms, it represents very little of the costs to produce hydrogen. So even if you have to duplicate or multiply by three the costs of water because you're using recycle or desalination, it's still not making a damage on the costs of producing hydrogen.
Nice. All right, let's have some fun. We love to have fun on this show. We're going to give you a magic wand. Mm-hmm. And with that wand, you get to use it one time for one thing in the next year. that would have the biggest impact on climate change from your perspective? Anna, how would you wave that wand?
That's a very fun moment here, because if we're looking at long-term and sustainable transformation of our societies and decarbonization, I think we have to use it in education. We have to use it in education. I think it's a matter of really having all agents in the society, not just the policymakers, not just the regulators, not just, you know, companies, but also each one of us, each individual really needs to understand the complexity of the decarbonization efforts that we all need to put in place to make sure we do it right.
Do you think, so is it awareness or is it education or is it both? So, because I find it's almost inconceivable that the average consumer would take the time to really understand what's happening behind that plug, do you think? Or are you talking about industrial customers?
No, I'm talking about all individuals. Yeah. And it's not just about the plug. It's about, you know, the behaviors. I think it's really education. Awareness is also important, but people need to be aware of that, but also be sufficiently educated to understand how they can change each individual, behavior, simple mm-hmm. things on the day-to-day life that can make the difference altogether.
Right. Great use of the wand. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. The next question could be difficult for you, but you've spent some time here, so let's see if you can work with us. We love to plant a tree in your name and in your honor and in respect for the time and expertise you share with us and our listeners. Is there a national forest or a place you would like to see us plant a tree in your name?
Well, that's a very neat initiative. Well, being from Portugal, I guess I have to choose pick a place in Portugal, in my home country. And there's a national park called Gerês in the northern part of the country that I really love. This would be a good place to plant a tree.
Well, right now about 5 producers are racing to see who gets to go to Portugal to plant that tree. I can hardly guess, but it's a lovely place, and we think we'll all enjoy putting one extra tree in there for that. Anna, it's been great to have you. I look forward to your talk later today at Reuters, but thank you, and I hope we can stay connected on what you're doing. Thank you for being with us on Path to Zero.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to path2zero@propane.com.